Hi, it's Diane. On my mind, the Democrats' impeachment strategy and the congressman leading the charge. Not even 2 months ago, Adam Schiff, chairman of the U.S. House Intelligence Committee, issued a subpoena to the acting director of national intelligence, setting in motion the impeachment inquiry into President Trump's dealings with Ukraine. Since then, a steady stream of government officials has been giving depositions behind closed doors. But next week, public testimony begins. New York Times Magazine contributing writer Jason Zengerle looks at the Democrats' path to impeachment. His new piece is titled Inside Adam Schiff's Impeachment Game Plan. Jason, thanks for joining us. I know we start next week with the public testimony phase of impeachment. Talk about why this whole process has moved, some would say, very, very quickly.
Well, I think there are a couple reasons. I think one, there's a political sort of imperative. Democrats are looking at the calendar and they know that there is an election obviously coming up next November, and also the presidential primaries will be starting in February. And I think they would like to have this done as quickly as possible because of that, possibly even before Christmas. I think the House would like to vote out impeachment before Christmas, you know, which would mean a Senate trial in January and hopefully getting this done so it doesn't interfere with the presidential campaign.
Is that timing realistic?
I think so. I mean, the challenge for Democrats will be keeping this as narrowly focused as possible on this issue of the Ukraine matter. And I think that's the other reason that they're moving fast. I think that Democrats see this as a very simple story. It's a very easy to understand scandal. It's different than the Mueller probe of Russian interference, which was a much more complicated tale. There were many more players. It took place on multiple continents. I was talking to one Intelligence Committee staffer who compared the Mueller story to a Tolstoy-esque story, whereas this Ukraine matter is kind of like an episode of The Sopranos, he said. And I think Democrats want to keep it as simple as possible because I think the public will understand it better.
Well, it's interesting because the people, if you continue with that comparison, look at the personalities of Robert Mueller and Adam Schiff.
And they're similar in some ways. I mean, I think they both are fairly sort of sober, even-keeled people. But, you know, Schiff is a politician. Mueller was a prosecutor and Schiff is an elected official. And I think there's a really important difference there. Mueller refused to fight back against President Trump over these last couple of years. You know, Trump was constantly impugning Mueller, impugning his investigators, calling the probe a witch hunt. And Mueller was silent. And I think that allowed Trump to define the Mueller probe in a lot of people's eyes and call it into question. Schiff will fight back. He's not encumbered the way Mueller was. He's willing to punch back. And Mueller was not willing to kind of follow his investigative findings to their logical conclusions. He was really hemmed in by the Justice Department Office of Legal Counsel's opinion that a sitting president couldn't be indicted. Schiff is not hemmed in by that. I think Schiff is going to go to places that Mueller would not go. And it's just going to be a very different process because of that.
So give us some of Adam Schiff's background and what prepares him to take on this role.
He's been in Congress for almost 20 years now. He was elected in 2000, really as a result of the Clinton impeachment. The Republican congressman in the district that Schiff now represents was named James Rogan, and he was one of the impeachment managers for the House when Clinton was impeached. And that created a real backlash in the district and led to Schiff's election. And, you know, he spent the first 10 or 15 years in the House as very much a workhorse, was, you know, respected among his colleagues for his diligence and his intelligence, but was really not well known outside of the halls of Congress. And that changed when President Trump was elected, because Schiff was the ranking member on the House Intelligence Committee. Republicans controlled the House, but Schiff was the top Democrat on the committee. And the Intelligence Committee undertook an investigation of Russian interference in the 2016 election, and that thrust Schiff into the spotlight. And before he was a politician, he was a prosecutor in the Los Angeles U.S. Attorney's Office. And he really, I think, called on that experience during the Intelligence Committee's public hearings. He became well known for his opening statements, which he used almost as the prosecutor would use an opening argument. He tried to tell kind of a larger story in terms of the Russia investigation, tried to connect the dots for people. He also started going on TV a lot as the ranking member of the committee. Since he was in the minority, he really didn't have much power. He couldn't issue subpoenas. He couldn't call witnesses. But he was able to use those opening statements and use his media appearances, whether it was on cable news shows or the Sunday shows or just having press conferences in the Capitol, to become kind of the Democrats' best explainer of the Russia scandal and the Russian interference. And I think that made him a more prominent figure. And then when Democrats took back the House last year, Schiff was elevated to chairman of the Intelligence Committee, and that's why you see him now leading this impeachment inquiry. Nancy Pelosi has decided to center it in the Intelligence Committee for a couple of reasons. One, it's in the Intelligence Committee's wheelhouse. I mean, it's an issue area that is natural for the Intelligence Committee. But I think, secondly, she has a lot of faith and trust in Schiff, and she is confident that he's the person to lead this process for Democrats.
Adam Schiff is now receiving protection, I gather.
He receives protection from the Capitol Police. Typically, members of both parties' leadership receive protection. A few people outside of leadership do as well, and he's now one of them. He's, you know, at the same time that he's been thrust into the spotlight, he's also been made a real target of criticism by both the president and by some of his Republican colleagues. And I think in sadly, in this day and age, that criticism can lead people to act in ways that are unsafe.
So as you report in your piece in the Sunday Times magazine, his staff, Adam Schiff's staff, was concerned about Trump and Ukraine even before the whistleblower complaint.
Yeah. When Schiff became the chairman of the Intelligence Committee, he really bulked up the committee's investigative staff. He hired a number of former federal prosecutors, a former FBI agent, and then he hired one investigator who had an expertise in Russia who happened to be raised in the Ukraine. And this investigator speaks Ukrainian. And this investigator noticed over the summer a number of articles in the Ukrainian press about Ambassador Yovanovitch's recall and other sort of strange happenings going on in Ukrainian-American relations. And in addition to those stories, this investigator also noticed Rudy Giuliani's comments about Ukraine in the American media. And they, the Intelligence Committee, I think working with the Foreign Affairs Committee as well, started to look into this even before the whistleblower complaint was filed. Ukraine was on their radar, and I think they were prepared to start an investigation. Obviously, the whistleblower complaint filled in the picture to a much greater degree than they understood it before that, but it was something that was on their radar.
And the whistleblower complaint went to someone on Adam Schiff's staff?
As I understand it, the whistleblower initially contacted an aide or aides on the Intelligence Committee staff, and the Intelligence Committee staffers told the whistleblower that he or she should hire an attorney and then file a complaint with an inspector general. That is not an unusual occurrence. That's something that I think happens frequently with the Intelligence Committee and other House investigative committees. Whistleblowers will contact them, and then the committee will say, you should take these steps first before you talk to us. Republicans have tried to make a big deal out of this initial contact. They want to call into question the whistleblower's credibility. They want to call into question Schiff's credibility. But it appears that the Intelligence Committee staffers handled this by the book and really did not have a full picture of what the whistleblower was even saying. I think the whistleblower, before the whistleblower could tell them everything the whistleblower wanted to say, the Intelligence Committee staffer said, you know, hold up a second, don't say anything else, get a lawyer, go to the Inspector General, and then that's the proper process. That's the proper procedure.
Now, before that whistleblower complaint came forward, what was Adam Schiff's position on impeachment?
He was against impeachment. He was very much with Nancy Pelosi on this. I mean, he viewed it as a dilemma. You know, he believed that the president had probably committed impeachable offenses in the Mueller, just obstructing the Mueller investigation, for one thing. But he also believed that if the president were to be impeached, he would be acquitted by the Senate, by the Republican Senate. And that would set a dangerous precedent, that it would be telling future presidents, you can do these things and you won't be convicted. And so he believed that the prospect of that outweighed the need to impeach Trump. I mean, even though he thought he could be impeached, he thought the fact that he'd be acquitted would meant that you shouldn't do it. But then when this whistleblower complaint came in, that changed his calculus. And he says it changed it for one major reason was he's very focused on the date of the Trump-Zelensky phone call, July 25th, which came the day after Mueller gave his testimony on Capitol Hill. And Schiff doesn't think that's a coincidence. He believes that the Trump's takeaway from Mueller's testimony, which, you know, if you remember, was a bit of a dud, that Trump believed this gave him license to do anything. And Schiff thinks that's the real danger. And that's I think that was sort of the final straw for him.
And not only for him, but for lots of other Democrats.
He was definitely not alone. I mean, it's been a real debate within the Democratic caucus ever since they took back the House. There have been a number of Democrats who wanted, I think, to impeach Trump since the moment he took the oath of office, and those numbers were growing. And you had people like Pelosi and Schiff who were arguing that we don't want to do this. You know, it'd be politically damaging. It would set a bad precedent. But when the Ukraine scandal came to light, a number of the more moderate Democrats who are in swing districts who are opposed to impeachment, I think because they feared it would hurt their reelection prospects in 2020, they came to favor it. You know, I think for a couple of reasons, but a big one is they viewed the Ukraine scandal as a more politically palatable scandal for them. It touched on national security. It was something they could explain to vote. They thought it was something they could explain to voters in their district and that voters would understand why this was something Trump should be impeached for. It was a safer issue for them in some ways. So there were a few in particular who were freshman Democrats from swing districts who have either intelligence or military backgrounds themselves. And they wrote an op-ed for The Washington Post that came out in favor of starting an impeachment inquiry. And that was the final straw. Once that happened, I think both Pelosi and others in Democratic leadership recognized that the caucus was united at this point and they could go ahead and launch the inquiry. And it was the day after that op-ed ran in the Post that Pelosi had her announcement on the Hill saying we're starting a formal inquiry.
So to what extent among Democrats is there still debate as to whether the Trump impeachment process or investigation should be narrowly or broadly focused?
I think there's still a good amount of debate on that. And it's similar to the debate that was going on before Pelosi announced the impeachment inquiry. I mean, I think the Democrats who wanted to impeach Trump before Ukraine, I think in general, those Democrats would favor a broader impeachment approach. Those like Pelosi and Schiff and some of these more moderate members who only came on board after the Ukraine scandal came to light, I think they favor a more narrow approach.
What would the broader approach encompass?
It could be quite broad. I mean, just ever since Democrats took back the House, the investigative committees they now control have been doing all sorts of investigations of Trump that Pelosi had instructed them to basically come up with your best case for impeachment or impeachable offenses and send it to the Judiciary Committee. So, you know, you have Maxine Waters' Financial Services Committee looking into Deutsche Bank. You have obviously the Intelligence Committee looking into Ukraine, the Judiciary Committee itself, the Oversight Committee as well, we're looking into the Emoluments Clause. There are all sorts of investigations they've been conducting that could find impeachable offenses. And I think some Democrats would say they have found impeachable offenses. So it could be on everything from emoluments to Deutsche Bank to obstruction of the Mueller probe to obstruction of the Ukraine probe to Ukraine itself. It could be quite broad. I think Speaker Pelosi, if she had her druthers, would like to see it be focused on Ukraine, possibly having an article of impeachment about obstruction of Congress that would include obstruction of the Ukraine probe and maybe some other kind of obstruction. Obviously, the Trump administration has been stonewalling Congress ever since Democrats took back the House. They just have refused to even participate in the oversight process. So I think a compromise position could possibly be a couple articles on Ukraine and then a larger obstruction of Congress article that would encompass some of Ukraine and some other matters as well.
Now a quick break. More from Jason Zengerle when we come back. Now, here's the rest of my conversation with Jason Zengerle. He's a contributing writer for the New York Times Magazine and a correspondent for GQ. His article titled Inside Adam Schiff's Impeachment Game Plan appears in the New York Times Magazine this Sunday. We have had a series of formal statements and testimonies behind closed doors with both Democrats and Republicans present. Why did Adam Schiff choose to go that way?
I think there are a couple reasons. I think there's a strong substantive reason in the sense that there is no special prosecutor in this matter. There's been no grand jury testimony. So Congress has had to investigate it itself. And Schiff has compared the closed door testimony to sort of grand jury proceedings where he wants to keep it behind closed doors because he doesn't want witnesses to be able to coordinate their testimony. He thinks that they're in an investigative phase and he wants to find out facts. And if you were to hold it in public this early, witnesses could see what another witness had said and they could, you know, tailor their testimony to fit that. So I think that was one big reason. I also do think there was a political reason, though, and that reason is it's allowed Democrats to control the narrative. They've been able to kind of control the information flow. They've been able to keep a steady drumbeat of stories in the press, you know, negative stories in the press about Trump and Ukraine, which gives the investigation more momentum. And I think that it's allowed them to keep momentum going in a way that, say, the Mueller probe did not have.
But there have been some leaks from somewhere behind those closed doors, whether they've come from Republicans or Democrats.
Yes, there have been leaks, I think, from both sides. The thing that's been most, I think, damaging for the president's case is the leaks of the opening statements from witnesses. Those have found their way to the press, and oftentimes those opening statements they've cast the president and other administration officials in a fairly harsh light. And I think this week, now that they're releasing the transcripts of the testimony, we're seeing some of the questioning of these witnesses after they've issued their opening statements. And actually, honestly, those have not been particularly good for the president as well. But, you know, you've been able to see some instances where Republican members questioning some of these witnesses have maybe cast a little doubt on their opening statements, or the opening statements maybe are a little bit more nuanced than we realized. But yeah, there has been information trickling out. And now that Schiff and the Democrats are releasing the transcripts themselves, I mean, we will actually see what's been happening behind closed doors.
I'd like to ask you about the testimony of Gordon Sondland, the ambassador to the European Union, and the fact that he has now gone back and changed his testimony. Talk about that.
It's pretty fascinating. He's in a very hard position. He is someone who is a longtime Republican fundraiser. He was initially opposed to Trump during the Republican presidential primary, but after Trump was elected, he gave $1 million to Trump's inaugural committee because I think he wanted to be an ambassador, and he wound up getting this ambassadorship to the European Union. And in that position, Trump made him a point man on Ukraine policy, which really makes no sense because that should not be in Sondland's purview. But he and Rudy Giuliani and Kurt Volker, they were part of the back channel that we're learning about.
Right.
And I think when he went in to give his initial testimony, it appears he was trying to both protect himself and protect President Trump. And it was in subsequent testimony from other witnesses recalling conversations with Sondland in which Sondland was making it fairly clear that he believed President Trump was withholding military aid to Ukraine until Ukraine announced investigations of Biden and other Democrats and this crazy conspiracy theory about the 2016 election. Once other witnesses said they'd had those conversations with Sondland, Sondland then claims, someone says, oh yeah, now I remember I said that. So he went back to revise his testimony. I think probably because he was afraid of being charged with perjury.
And what about Kurt Volker?
You know, Volker's another witness who I think is also, he was in a similar position to Sondland. He was very much part of this back channel. I think he was trying to serve two different masters. One, he was, I think, trying to served the State Department's official policy on Ukraine and official American policy on Ukraine. At the same time, he had Rudy Giuliani pushing for these investigations, and he was trying to sort of toggle between the two of them and find some compromise. And ultimately, that's an impossible place to be, and he wound up having to resign his post because of it.
So do you believe that some of the others that Adam Schiff wishes to talk with, for example, Rudy Giuliani, are they going to be heard?
I doubt it. I don't think the Democrats want to wait for the courts to resolve that issue. Rudy Giuliani will not appear voluntarily, and he won't respond to a subpoena. So in order to get him to testify, the House would have to go to court to get the courts to enforce that subpoena, and that's going to take a long time. And I think that Democrats don't want to wait. Schiff doesn't want to wait, and I think also Schiff feels that he has a strong enough case without someone like Giuliani testifying. I think the more interesting decision Schiff will have to make will be about someone like John Bolton, who has indicated that he would testify if the courts ordered him to.
Right.
And the question is, will the courts act, you know, quickly enough that they could get Bolton in there? I think that Democrats feel like they have a strong case. Someone like Bolton, I think, would make it stronger. I mean, the one thing that the Democrats and Schiff lack right now are people who spoke to Trump about this a lot. I mean, Sondland himself, I believe, did. But, you know, everybody else, Bill Taylor, Ambassador Yovanovitch, they didn't talk to Trump. And the Republican defense of Trump and the Republican attempt to undermine the testimony of people like Taylor and Yovanovitch will be, you know, you're assuming that President Trump was withholding military aid for these investigations, but that's just your assumption. You don't know that for sure. Trump himself never told you that. I think if Democrats could get Bolton in there, he might be able to make a more explicit link between that issue and what President Trump was actually saying.
What about Attorney General William Barr?
He's another person who's in a tricky position. You know, I think everybody remembers him from the Mueller investigation and how he really kneecapped Mueller and kneecapped the Democrats by setting the tone for the report by, you know, first sending that summary up to Capitol Hill that I think in some ways, you know, greatly underplayed Mueller's conclusions. And then the day that he finally did release the report, I think about a month later, holding a press conference in which he said that, you know, the report found no collusion, no obstruction. It doesn't appear that he's willing to take those kind of affirmative steps with this Ukraine matter. You know, he did. The Justice Department decided not to open an investigation of its own. When the Inspector General got the whistleblower's report, he made a criminal referral to the Justice Department, and the Justice Department decided there wasn't anything to investigate. So Barr, in some respects, did help the president there. But, you know, there was a lot of reporting yesterday in the Post and the Times and elsewhere that the president wanted the attorney general to go out and have another press conference similar to the one he had about the Mueller report, saying that the phone call was perfect and there's no problem here. And Barr has refused to do that. So I think he's willing to try to protect the president up to a point, but he's not going to go as far as the president would like him, appears.
But in the past, when someone has not done what the president has asked for, the president has begun tweeting nasty comments about that person. We haven't seen that yet. as far as the Attorney General is concerned.
No, you haven't. But, you know, at the same time, the Attorney General hasn't quite done what Jeff Sessions did. I mean, what Jeff Sessions recused himself from the Russia investigation because he'd been on the Trump campaign. And I think there are people who believe that Barr should have recused himself from this investigation because he's mentioned in the phone call, the Trump-Zelensky phone call. Trump mentions Barr in the call as someone that the Ukrainians should talk to. And, you know, I think there are Democrats and others who would say as soon as he came up on that phone call, Barr should have recused himself from the Justice Department's deliberations about whether to investigate this matter. Barr has not done that. He still retains some control. And I think possibly the fact that he's not gone the Sessions route and recused himself, that maybe hasn't angered Trump to the degree that he was angry with Sessions. At the same time, you know, I think Trump also recognizes, or he should recognize, that Barr has done a lot of things for him that maybe other attorney generals wouldn't have done. And he still seems to be very much in his corner.
So tell me what we should expect from these public hearings that begin next week. What's the purpose now of holding these public hearings? Will we be seeing and hearing the same people who testified behind closed doors?
We'll be seeing and hearing some of them. The first three will be Yovanovitch, Taylor, and Kent, George Kent, who's a State Department official. And I think we'll be seeing those three first because I think Schiff and the Democrats believe that they're the most damaging witnesses towards the president. And I think Democrats expect that those witnesses will largely repeat what they said behind closed doors. They'll make the case that the president was withholding military aid from the Ukraine until the Ukrainians announced an investigation of Biden. And Democrats believe that bringing these hearings into the public, having these witnesses testify on TV will bring public opinion to their side. Americans will see them on television making these allegations, telling the story they've already told behind closed doors, and that will drive the message home to Americans.
And to what extent will Republicans have the right to call witnesses?
Republicans cannot call witnesses on their own. They don't have, since they're in the minority, they don't have subpoena power. They can ask for witnesses to be called, but ultimately that power resides with Schiff, and Schiff can decide whether Republicans get the witnesses they want or not. And Schiff has set a deadline of tomorrow for Republicans to make their requests of the witnesses they want. And they have to basically send the list of witnesses to Schiff and their justification for why they want these witnesses. Schiff has set very narrow parameters on what these hearings should be about. And therefore, the Republicans would have to explain why their witnesses fall within these narrow parameters. You know, if the Republicans had their druthers, they would call Joe Biden probably to testify, or Hunter Biden. Schiff, I will not allow that. And I think that he has a lot of power in that respect.
So what's the risk here for Democrats?
I think there are a couple risks. I think one risk is the Republicans can turn the hearing into a circus. And I think that's something they will try to do. It appears that the Republicans are going to put Jim Jordan on the Intelligence Committee. He's probably the president's most aggressive and in some ways most effective defender. He's not on the Intelligence Committee right now, but Republicans, I think, will get one of their members to drop off and put Jordan on so he can be in the hearing. And I expect, you know, Jordan is very good at derailing hearings. It's something that Democrats have seen him do, you know, on the Oversight Committee, I believe on the Judiciary Committee. I think he will try to do that.
How could he do that?
Well, he's going to have 5 minutes to ask questions. So he can do it in his own time to question. He can make all sorts of procedural objections. I mean, there are ways to grind these things to a halt. And I think one thing Republicans really would like to do is, I think they want to try to force Schiff into making some kind of error, or losing his cool, something like that. They're gonna do whatever they can to disrupt this, to make this a less TV friendly kind of experience. They don't want these witnesses to be able to tell their story without any kind of interruption or pushback. And then the hearing will be a little different from other typical congressional hearings. Normally, the way these hearings work is each member has 5 minutes to ask questions. And usually, you know, the members will spend 4 minutes speechifying and then ask a question for the final minute. So you don't really get a lot of information. The way Democrats have structured these hearings, Schiff and Nunes and the committee's lawyers, Republicans and Democrats, will be allowed 45 minutes of questions to the witnesses to really sort of develop a line of questioning, allow the witnesses to really kind of give fuller answers. And then after those 45 minutes, then you'll go to the 5 minute rounds of questions. So I think Democrats are hoping that by doing it that way, the witnesses will be able to tell a more kind of sustained narrative in a way that was similar to what was happening behind closed doors.
What do you expect to come out of this?
I doubt anything will come out that we don't already know from the closed door depositions. I think this will largely be an opportunity for Democrats to just make this case in public and have these witnesses make this case in public. I doubt new information will arise. The reason these three witnesses are being called first is because Democrats know what they're going to say, and Democrats think that it'll be damaging to Trump. I suppose, you know, we could see some interesting questions from Republicans trying to undermine their testimony, and we might see new lines of argument there that we haven't seen before. But I'd imagine in terms of what Democrats are expecting to happen, it will very much follow the testimony these witnesses have already given behind closed doors.
And how long then do you expect these hearings to go on?
Well, I think, you know, we'll have these three this week, and then I think the Democrats will want to call some other witnesses as well. I'd imagine they will not be receptive to the list of witnesses Republicans give them. And then I think it's a real question about, you know, someone like Bolton and whether the courts will move quickly enough to get him in there to testify. I think Democrats want to move quickly. I think that they see the calendar and they see the imperative of getting this done as soon as possible.
Well, Jason Zengerle, thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me.
And that's all for today. Find us on Facebook and Twitter. Send us an email, drpodcast@wamu.org. Our theme music is composed by Jim Brunberg and Ben Landsberg of Wonderly. The show is produced by Rebecca Kaufman and Allison Brody. Our engineers this week are Cliff Gallagher and Natalie Yurev-Lipker. Thanks for listening, all. I'm Diane Rehm.